$19.98. Now, that's only $34.99 a pillow. You will not get that price anywhere retail. It's the lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. And like all MyPillow products, 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, use my promo code USA.
The FCC recently passed a bill allowing phone carriers to develop a new call blocking tool and make it illegal for phone companies to block unwanted calls. FCC Commissioner Ajit Pai joined Fox News and says robocalls are the main issue people complain about.
These calls not only harass their consumers, they also have a big impact on the networks themselves. If you're handling all these billions of robocalls, you're spending time transferring those calls, handling consumer complaints about those calls. It's a huge hassle for everybody involved.
Just how big of a deal are robocalls? Tech expert Brett Larson says,
we're getting billions of these robocalls. It is literally the most complained about thing to the Federal Trade Commission.
Really?
Yeah, it's literally over 60 billion robocalls in a year. I believe that's what we got last year.
Larson was speaking there on Fox News. The NBA has punished a Golden State Warriors investor and board member after an incident in Game 3 of the playoffs with the Raptors. USA Radio Network's Wendy King has the details.
Lowry goes diving into the stands. He's upset with a fan.
Kyle Lowry of the Toronto Raptors was shoved by a fan after landing on some courtside seats. The fan was Mark Stevens, the Silicon Valley billionaire who also happens to own a small portion of the Golden State Warriors. The NBA reacted quickly. Stevens has been fined $500,000 and he's been banned from attending any NBA games for a year.
Stevens did release a statement apologizing for his actions. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Did you know that one in five people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. We are in an era where we are constantly bickering. We have those on the right who are angry. We have those on the left who are angry. We are going back and forth. We seem to talk past one another constantly. We have our own websites. We have our own social media. We have essentially our own dedicated cable channels. And it's a very difficult time to patch things up. Some people, however, are trying, and Sally Cohn is one of them. We're going to be speaking to her today. Her new book is The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. Sally, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
How did we arrive at this low state? I mean, we can talk about Donald Trump, but it really started before then, didn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's I don't know. I mean, I have some theories of how we got here, right? It has it's about a combination of the nature of the media environment that we're in, the political environment. Like, politics in modern the last 50 or 60 years have actually deliberately stoked anger and animosity among people as a turnout strategy. Both parties have done it. The Republicans have done it a bit more and made it a core strategy to stoke hatred and fear and resentment. The media took on a lot of that, both because of changes in policy and because of more competition. They need more audiences more, and one way to get audiences more is to have more fights. So there's that too, and then of course this all happens in the context of the fact that we have a pretty hateful history as a country. It's not like hate, divisiveness, otherizing is anything new to us.
No, that's a very good point. Unfortunately, I think, comes to us kind of naturally. And there really hasn't been, I don't think, any single moment where we've stepped back, looked at ourselves, examined what we've done, and thought about, what do we really do? I mean, maybe the 60s came close, but it wasn't a really, really thoroughgoing moment where, for example, like in South Africa, you had a Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Sure.
I think we almost need that in the United States, but where do you start? Because there's so many issues on which you could begin that.
Well, even just having that conversation is interesting because it acknowledges that we have the residue and scars of the hate in our past that are still impacting us as people and as a country today. And so if we get to the point of then saying, okay, what do we do about it? How do we move forward? At least we've acknowledged that's a reality and a problem, whereas we're still honestly fighting over that. There are a lot of people who want to say, like, look, that's the past. It doesn't matter now. But when you look at the inequity in our schools and our communities and in policing and in wealth and in home ownership and at every single layer, and you see those inequities play out by race, by gender, by immigration status, by religion, by sexuality, you know that is because that residue of hate has left its thumbprint on our society and all of us.
We're speaking with Sally Cohn. She's the author of The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. It's all well and good for you and I to sit here, Sally, and talk about, you know, what we ought to do and what we have to acknowledge. But as you alluded to a moment ago, there are plenty of people who don't acknowledge that there's even really an issue to begin with. How do we approach folks like that?
Well, I think the key thing is first to talk to people in a way that doesn't stop them listening. And, you know, look, and I'm not telling people what to do. I'm saying what personally for me works and what I've found to be my own journey. And if you are in a situation with someone where you feel politically confrontational with them or ideologically, or, you know, obviously people have to make choices that are about their own safety, their own self-care. So, you know, one option is certainly to just not engage. If you are going to engage, if you do feel like you can engage, I think it's important to engage in ways that people can hear you, because when we just start yelling at people, and when we just start trying to, you know, attack their opinion with our opinion, or worse, when we start to actually attack them as people, when we make it personal, then they, not only is that mean, but they don't listen. People don't listen because people don't like being told they're stupid, or they're hateful, or they're this, or they're that. So at the very least, beginning things trying to have conversations that at a core, at a base, have mutual respect and respect for each other's humanity is critical.
I don't know if you found this personally in your experience, but one thing that has guided me when I have attempted to do this sort of thing is when you're trying to engage someone that you may differ from significantly, politically, culturally, etc., don't do it online. It is much easier not to listen online. It's just structurally so much more difficult to get through to someone, and I find that all the conversations that I have had in person, directly, engage the humanity. People are more polite in person. People like can see your person with a face and a body and a real human being, and that means something. It's significant to people, even if we don't think about it.
Yeah, you know, if that's true, sure. And one of the things I cover in the book is some of the research on why it is that technology, social media, can be inherently dehumanized. However, there's also examples of how people have reached across differences, shown kindness, generosity, humanity in the face of cruelty in ways online that have radically transformed people and helped them move away from extreme hate. And the truth is, you know, the book's called The Opposite of Hate, and the opposite of hate to me isn't love. You don't have to love people to not hate them. You just have to not hate them. And what the antidote really is connection. Because when you know people, when you have experienced your mutual humanity, it is harder to hate them. And one of the things that's amazing about the internet and amazing about social media is that it brings us this potential to know and care more about and understand wider circles of people than we may have in our own homes, our own schools, our own workplaces. That's also a potentially great tool for fighting hate. It depends on how we use it.
Well, I guess then that even if it means spending more time on Facebook or Twitter, I'm going to have to reread that section of the book and give it a little extra effort, because I suppose there are only so many people that I can reach in person, and it's important to keep as many connections in digital and analog both. We've been speaking with Sally Cohn. She's the author of The Opposite of Hate, A Field Guide to Repairing Our Humanity. Sally, thank you so much for being with us and for making this effort. All the best.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
I'm Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
American investors lost $3.7 trillion of net worth in the fourth quarter of 2018. When your portfolio's value decreases right before or early in your retirement, it can have a crippling effect. It's called sequence of returns risk, and it's a risk you simply cannot afford. We're Sound Income Strategies, and we're on a mission to help hardworking Americans transform their hard-earned savings into steady, predictable retirement income. Call now for free, no-obligation information to help you get started on your way to steady, predictable retirement income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Investment advisory services offered through Sound Income Strategies, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Let's transform that risk into income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Sound Income Strategies, powered by the Retirement Income Store.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then we suggest you call Page Publishing at 1-800-658-8202 immediately. That's 1-800-658-8202. Page Publishing is looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we will give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we'll get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything: editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or biography, and want to get it published, then you need to call Page Publishing and do it immediately. Call 1-800-658-8202 now for your free author submission kit. Numerically, that's 1-800-658-8202. Again, for your free author submission kit, call 1-800-658-8202. That's 1-800-658-8202. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with a simple phone call. Call Page Publishing at 1-800-658-8202 for your free author submission kit.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. I have always been fascinated by the English language and, in particular, by British mannerisms of speech. Perhaps I have a little bit of Henry Higgins in me. Well, we're going to dig deeper on that front today. We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of the blog Separated by a Common Language and the book The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. Lynn Murphy, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Sure thing. So what was your first experience as an American encountering the Queen's English in its native land?
In its native land? Well, it was just 18 years ago. I moved to England to take a job at the University of Sussex, and that was my first time in England. There was all of my worldly belongings moving there to stay. But I had lived in South Africa for 4 years before that and had started to learn some of the lingo.
And I suppose it's a separate question. What's the difference between the lingo in South Africa, let alone the accent, versus England? But what did you notice as an American? What did you most experience difficulty, or at least shake your head a little bit at when you first started speaking with folks on a regular basis there?
Well, I think once you really live in a culture rather than just being a tourist in it, you have a lot of administrative vocabulary that you need. A lot of, the bureaucracies
right.
are all different.
Right.
So you do a lot of learning what the terms are for different departments that you need to talk to and different documents you need to have and boring
right.
stuff like that. South Africa has got some of its own lingo. So, for instance, a traffic light is a robot there.
Oh, wow.
And there's some other fun things coming from other languages there and a lot of different accents. So I was, in South Africa they use British spelling and they use a lot of the words like biscuit instead of cookie or pavement instead of sidewalk or things like that. So those kinds of things I was prepared for, but there were also a lot of differences.
I know that there are a lot of transplants on both sides of the Atlantic, especially between New York and London, a lot of professional exchange, certainly between those cities at the very least. Do you think that there is more of a language shock for an American coming to England or for a Brit coming to New York? And what are their respective experiences in, as far as you've been able to tell?
Well, I think British people hear a lot more American voices than Americans hear of British voices. So there's a lot more American TV, a lot more American music playing there than vice versa. So they come expecting to be able to communicate fairly well and, of course, knowing some of the lingo already. But I'm sure they're surprised by a lot of the things that they don't know. I've been doing a difference of the day on Twitter since 2009, and I mostly do a different difference every day. I've done thousands of differences. So you will just keep learning more and more and more the longer you live in one of these places.
We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. You are married to a Brit. Are there still moments
yep.
where one of you doesn't know what the other one is talking about?
Yes. I mean, some of it I think is down to stubbornness at this point, but
I know that's true of my wife and me, and we both speak American.
Just yesterday he was complaining about, when he asked me a question, do you want to do this? And I say, sure. And he'll say, I don't know what sure means. I'm like, I've told you 1,000 times it means yes. But he takes it as, resisting. So, those kinds of little interactional things, the way that British people and American people make suggestions can be a bit different. And so, he can sort of bristle at me sounding a bit bossy compared to how he'd want to put things. So, there's those kinds of things. But, we're aware of them. We get past it.
Well, that's an interesting observation there. To what extent are those cultural attitudes embedded in the language, or are they just a product of the language more than the culture? I suppose, in a way, it's a chicken and egg question. Are Brits really hyper?
Absolutely.
Are Brits really hyper polite, and are Americans really bossy and rude? I mean, how does they're obviously?
You can't really judge it that way,
right?
Because what sounds bossy in America doesn't sound bossy in Britain and vice versa. So nothing in the language is inherently bossy. It's what you're used to hearing and the conditions you're used to hearing it in make things seem bossy. So, for example, British people say please a lot more than Americans do, at least twice as much more. And they do it in situations where Americans wouldn't say please because Americans tend to say please for pleading, for sounding desperate or sounding bossy. So in ordering things in a restaurant, for example, an American will say, I'll have the something, and the British will say, please may I have something.
Right.
And it's not that the British is necessarily more polite. It's just the way they do it. on the other hand, Americans say thank you about twice as much as British people do. So we're both doing polite things. We're just doing them in different ways. An example of that would be if you offer me a piece of cake, in America I might say, yes, thank you. But in Britain I'd have to say, yes, please. So we're using the same words for slightly different effects, but we're all being polite in the way we know how to be polite.
I know my wife and I are certainly among them, but there are many in the United States who are Anglophiles, who watch a lot of British television, who listen to the BBC radio with some degree of frequency. How much of that do you think is a result, I'm sure it varies from person to person, of these little linguistic differences and those being just kind of moments of pleasure and you know, a pleasant disorientation, so to speak?
I think people really enjoy that kind of thing, but I think we have especially more patience for it or enjoyment of it when it's British. You know, there's this sort of idea of Britain as being cool or as being educated or as being lots of other things. So, you know, we do, those of us who like to watch things from different places do enjoy that aspect of it. You always learn a little bit. You always wonder a little bit when you watch something and they're using different words. But I just noticed that we do that a lot with British, but we don't seem to do it with, say, you know, New Zealand or Canada.
Right.
You know, there's
right.
a certain cachet that Britain has for Americans.
So having lived there for a while, tell us the truth. Are they cooler and more educated?
No.
Okay. Drat.
That's the thing you have to get used to is that, you know, British people are just people. And, you know, the education, the picture that we get of Britain in America is usually sort of upper-class Britain. You know, if you watch Downton Abbey or
right.
if you watch Sherlock or if you listen to BBC broadcasters, you know, you're not hearing people on the street talk. You're hearing a sort of upper-refined kind of speech that comes from certain schools and certain places. Whereas, you know, in everyday life, there's a huge variety of ways that people speak and a huge variety of personalities and a huge variety of levels of education and intelligence, just like in America.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
So you sit down and do your budget, and you look at all your monthly costs and your bills and your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. That is the typical savings. $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your health care. And when it comes to healthcare sharing ministries, MediShare is really the gold standard. It's been around for 25 years and has more than 400,000 members. It's been around so long and grown so much because it works. And whether you're single or married or have kids, this could make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. $500 a month can more than cover a car payment or payback loans, whatever. So join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Here's the number to call. They are incredibly kind and helpful to talk to. 855-90-BIBLE. That's 855-90-BIBLE. 855-90-BIBLE.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reports a modest increase in jobs for the month of May. USA Radio Network's John Clemens reports.
The gain of only 75,000 jobs for the last reporting period indicated some businesses may be becoming cautious. Yet the jobless rate remained at a nearly 50-year low. Eleni Karageorge of the Bureau of Labor Statistics tells us the jobless rate remained at 3.6% in May.
Total non-farm payroll employment increased by 75,000 in May, and the unemployment rate remained at 3.6%. Employment continued to trend up in professional and business services and in health care.
The New York man accused of planning an attack in Times Square will be in a Brooklyn federal court just after 2 o'clock Eastern time today. The 22-year-old has been identified as Ashiqul Alam. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
At Walgreens, we know that your day doesn't stop for diabetes. So when you've got places to go and people to see, count on Walgreens every day to get expert diabetes advice 24/7. Find all major brands of testing supplies like Walgreens True Metrics in-store and online. And download tools to help you stay on track, like our 5-star mobile app with Pill Reminder. At Walgreens, we are your diabetes go-to. Stop by and talk to your pharmacist today. Walgreens, trusted since 1901.
Are you tired of high cable TV rates? Sign up for Dish today and get a $500 bonus offer while supplies last. Plus, lock in your price for 2 years guaranteed. Call All-American Dish, your Dish authorized retailer now.
800-610-5739. 800-610-5739. That's 800-610-5739. Offers require credit qualification, 24-month commitment, early termination fee, Eddie Auto Pay. Restrictions apply. Call for details.
And now, it's the news.
We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. Now that you've lived for quite a while in England yourself, how many aspects of British English have you adapted into your personal mode of speech?
Well, I like to say that my accent lives in Atlantis because I was mistaken for British the other day in Ithaca, New York. So, you know, it's because I pronounce my T's rather more crisply than I used to. Right. I just said rather more. That sounded pretty British.
Right.
Some of my vowels are sort of halfway between, and there are a lot of words that I've just come to say in the British way, either because I want to be understood. So I had, you know, it's easier to get my sandwich if I say tomato rather than tomato when I order it.
Right.
But also because sometimes the argument that ensues if I use the Americanism is just too much to bear.
Right.
Or not the argument, the mockery. So, you know, something like, I'll say herb now instead of herb for things like parsley. Because if I don't, I have to go through a whole spiel with whoever
you have to identify yourself. Where do you come from? The whole conversation. You're obliged almost to a 2-minute conversation under the best of circumstances.
Yeah, and it's often, you know, you Americans, why do you say it that way? Why do you say it wrong?
Right.
And,
okay.
You know, I don't want to get into that because it's not wrong. It's just American.
Exactly. So to smooth the way, you kind of
do it.
Right, right. How many of these differences have we picked up and adapted? I notice especially, it seems to me that there are a few, and no specific ones occur to me now, but there are certain British modes of speech that have been adapted, especially in big cities among younger folks in the U.S., and I'm sure that must be the case on the other side of the pond as well. How much is that happening that you notice?
Well, it happens all the time. It happens much more in the America to Britain direction because of that exposure to American television and such. But also, there are a lot more Americans than there are Brits, you know, so there's more language, more American language being heard in the world these days than British. So a lot goes over there, and there's a lot of backlash to it. When British words come over to America, either they're seen as something a little bit pretentious, you know, they'll be cool in some circles, but not others, so to say a queue rather than standing on the line, or to use the sort of super British words like gobsmacked.
Yes.
That's sort of cute. Other things just come in under the radar. So, you know, for instance, in the 2008 elections, all of a sudden people were vetting
right.
candidates and vetting people for the Supreme Court. And that was something that came over from British racing slang. And I don't think most people who started using the word knew or started reading the word knew that it was coming over from Britain. Or when children suddenly started going missing instead of vanishing. I don't think most people
right.
realize that was coming over from Britain, but there are lots of things that do that.
I don't think that a whole lot of people prior to the, at least I remember it from 2003, and it's sort of recurred in the wake of the controversies surrounding President Trump, that the word dossier much came up with in American English. But I certainly remember that being around a lot in the media for the first time around the lead up to the Iraq war, given the dossier that was compiled by the Blair government, and then again with regard to Christopher Steele. That in particular seems to be a Britishism, or a more frequently heard word in British at any rate. So there certainly is a lot of that that interaction.
Yeah, you get a lot of that, I think, because the media is very mixed. You know, British mm-hmm. media people and you know, the reporters who are working in Washington, they're all mixing, and
right.
they're getting information from each other, and so it's really easy for information and for words to pass that way.
Absolutely, and one of our other guests this week is Catty Kay, and she is a prime example of that cross-filtration. We're speaking with Lynn Murphy. She is the author of The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. I suppose another product of the mass media may be that the number of differences between the two branches of the mother tongue have been reduced. Have you noticed that over the course of your exposure to British English?
Well, I think the British press is very sensitive about this point, that American words are coming over and that there's not going to be a difference anymore. And, you know, there's some of that. There's, you know, if you speak in business speak, you know, there's a lot that goes back and forth between the two, and there's a lot of influence of American business speak on British business and that sort of thing. At the same time, when words come over from one place to another, they very often change. And so, for example, fries, French fries, has gone over to
right.
Britain, and, you know, people say, oh, but we say chips. Except if you look at what people do with the word fries there, they only use it for the skinny kind like you'd get at McDonald's. And the ones that are more traditional British ones are chips. And so you can see the language specializing when it moves and doing interesting things.
Do you suppose that UKIP will advocate a limit on the number of American words that can enter the country at any point in the near future?
UKIP is interesting because, of course, they started as an anti-Europe
right.
Right. organization. So they sometimes sort of try to show allegiance to America, and especially to certain brands of politics
right.
in America. And I loved UKIP had a they had a demonstration, and there was a man holding a poster that said, UKIP wants you, and it had a picture of Uncle Sam on it. And I don't know if they're coming or going, you know,
right.
from their relationship with America.
Well, I'm not sure either, given that their former leader, Nigel Farage, has probably one of the most recognizably French names imaginable.
And,
so
yeah, and his wife is German or Russian or something like that. So, they're a funny group.
Yes, they are. And you know, two funny languages, and but I do revel in the difference, you know, let alone, and there's a whole different set of subjects we can get into with accent alone, and it's something else that I'm sure, having lived in other Commonwealth countries, that you notice as well. But the wording and the phrasing is something that I've always been fascinated with, and I really appreciate you taking the time to kind of flesh that out with us today. We've been speaking with Lynn Murphy, again, author of the blog Separated by a Common Language, and also the author of The Prodigal Tongue, The Love-Hate Relationship Between American and British English. Lynn, thanks so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
I'm Wolf Blitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
For more information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
Wouldn't it be great to see your windows in a whole new light? Do it right. Call your local neighborhood experts. Budget Blinds. You'll get beautiful style and personalized service for every budget. We bring the showroom right to your home, so you can choose from hundreds of blinds, shades, shutters, and drapes. Plus smart home window coverings you control with the touch of a button. And with Budget Blinds, we do it all for you. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy. There's a reason why Budget Blinds is the number one provider of custom window coverings in North America. When we say we have style and service for every budget, we really mean it. So let's get your home a whole lot of gorgeous. Get your free consultation right at home. Just go online to budgetblinds.com or call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS. Call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS for your free consultation right at home. Now that's beautiful. At participating independently owned and operated franchises only. Ask for details.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. Today we're speaking with Jessica Bruder. She is the author of Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century. Jessica, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Well, the open road, it used to be something that Americans aspired to, getting out there, traveling across the country, traveling in an RV, maybe even living in one. It seemed to be a promise of freedom. But your investigation that you conducted and written up in this book really seems to be the opposite. It seems to be what people are doing on the way down as opposed to doing on the way up.
Yeah, it's funny. Whenever I saw an RV, back before I started working on this book project, I assumed that the occupants were probably the last of the great pensioners, you know, enjoying their golden years on some secure savings and, you know, going to see everything from Old Faithful to Niagara Falls and just, you know, writing postcards along the way. And it just seemed like this really just charmed existence. And while those people, by all means, are still out there, they've been joined by a whole new group of folks who have really been battered around by the economy, particularly in a society where we still have, you know, $7.25 is our federal minimum wage and housing costs keep going up. And for a lot of people, that's put them in a pretty untenable situation, for which going mobile has, you know, has kind of been the valve that releases some of the pressure.
I certainly see people in my neck of the woods, and I live in southern Oregon,
who use RVs or trailers as basically their in-law unit. I mean, this is their plan for retirement or to help their parents. And I think it seems to me that's something born of economic necessity. Also, how have some of the people that you've talked to made the decision that I can't afford a home anymore, and this is what I'm going to do instead?
Yeah, I mean, the stories are as unique as the people themselves, but for a lot of people, for a lot of people in general, 2008 was a wake-up call. But for people in particular who are on the brink of retirement and suddenly faced, without having time to make it up, losing their savings, possibly losing their 401ks, losing the equity in their homes that they plan to retire on, it was really a particularly dire blow. So I met people out on the road who had, again, lost all of those things, and some of them had pretty high-profile jobs during their main careers, and I also met people who had been caught on the low-wage treadmill and had never been able to put away enough to retire. And, you know, meanwhile, we live in a culture where pensions have been replaced with 401ks. In the 80s, 401ks were cynically marketed as instruments of financial freedom, while really taking the risk off of the shoulders of the employer and moving it over to the worker. And I think that's been kind of a disaster. So we've got all these factors that have people getting out on the road from different economic strata.
We're speaking with Jessica Bruder. She is the author of Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century. You know, what is day-to-day life like for these folks? And is it actually less expensive than what the alternatives are?
I believe it can be less expensive. People envision that folks living this lifestyle are constantly in motion. And that's actually not true. Hmm. Often it's about getting to where you need to be and staying there for a while. Often they drive less than commuters in urban areas do. So for many people, there are thousands of employers who hire these folks over the country, from Amazon hiring them to do warehouse work, which can involve walking 15 miles on a concrete floor on a day, to Texas oil fields that hire them as gate guards, to the annual sugar beet harvest that hires them to work as ground crew, shoveling beets and doing some other pretty tough work on 12-hour shifts, to campgrounds and national parks all over the country. So that's where you'll find these people is doing these jobs. They are tough jobs. They typically do not pay very well. However, they are one small area of the workforce in which ageism does not seem to be a factor. They are taking all warm bodies and all comers. So a lot of people are working those jobs, and when they're not, they are going financially dormant the best they can. Sometimes they're on public lands where they can camp for free or cheap. Often I see people using solar panels to generate their own electricity because the cost of that technology has come down so incredibly within recent years and put it within reach of a very wide audience. So that's some of the stuff that they're up to.
You know, I hate to draw the parallel, but it kind of seems like you've created a latter-day version of the Grapes of Wrath here. I mean, there's basically a motorized itinerant a class that's burgeoning in America, and that it seems on the face of it that it can't be good.
I think it's pretty challenging, and one of the big differences between these folks who are out on the road now related to economic circumstances and people who were out in the aftermath of the Great Depression, in my mind, is the post-Depression folks always envisioned reintegrating with mainstream society. So everybody was just figured, you know, this is a temporary anomaly, things are going to get better, and I'll be back in. And meanwhile, today, I don't think people believe that the cavalry is going to come, that things are going to change, that what is starting to feel like a long emergency, you know, in everything from our economy to the climate to just the overarching situation of, you know, how we're going to make it in the world. I don't think people feel like we're going to return to the old quo. I think the idea that we might seems quite clear to them. So most of the people I met were really planning to do this for the long haul. And that was something that surprised me, but makes sense now.
That's really incredible. Maybe it's more akin to Mad Max than it is to the grapes of wrath. Because I mean, the grapes of meth. Like, what's the ultimate end here? I mean, how does somebody live out their life in a situation where at some point they're not going to be able to drive? And if we are as a society, and hopefully our leaders realizing that there is a growing group of people who are turning to this because there's no economic alternative, like, what are we going to end up with? A bunch of people driving around filling the roads and with fires in oil barrels to light the chiaroscuro. I mean, what's the end game here?
Oh, I wish I knew what the end game was, but I think the trend will continue to grow, and I also think the crackdown on it is going to keep growing. Right now, we have a widespread wave what people are worriedly referring to as the criminalization of homelessness. There's also been a crackdown in the national parks. I just got another email yesterday talking about how people who live full-time in their vehicles are being hustled off the land and sometimes not even given the right that, you know, every person visiting this public land is entitled to in terms of staying there, which is upsetting to me. And at the same time, you know, places where these people gather, I started hanging out with them in 2013, and the numbers are just swelling. The numbers are absolutely swelling. And, you know, there's an interest in the whole tiny house movement and cheap minimalism, but people never talk about the fact that economic factors actually may be shaping even those factors. And I think there's a lot more of that going on than we realize.
This is an outcropping of a larger problem, which is that we don't have affordable housing in this country, and certainly in places like the San Francisco Bay Area, where there are people working for enormous companies and often well-paid people who are in this situation that still can't afford basic housing.
Yeah, I met people who were pushed out of the Bay Area when I believe they were in like a manufactured housing park. And, you know, that was swept away for luxury condos, and suddenly those people were living in a van because there was really nowhere else they could afford.
Yeah.
I met a guy also from the Bay Area who had been a San Francisco cab driver for many years, planned to retire on the value of his medallion, but got pushed out by Uber, found his medallion was no longer worth a dime, and is also living in a van. So it's really quite striking to see the situations that have gotten these people out on the road.
Yeah. I just, maybe Tom Joad is out there somewhere, and maybe before he loses the ability to keep driving, he and a few other folks in a similar situation can get together and do something about it, because ultimately, I don't know if there's any other alternative. Jessica Bruder, she is the author of Nomadland, Surviving America in the 21st Century. Thank you so much for talking with us about this, and thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks for caring about these people and their stories.
Happy trails. Happy trails.
That's all the time we have this week on Now It's the News. Now It's the News was created and produced by Derek Blair. For more information, go to nowitsthenews.com, follow us on Twitter at nowitsthenews, and until next week, I remain yours truly, Derek Blair.
Happy trails!
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our a team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote.
Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-319-2629. That's 800-319-2629. 800-319-2629.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Discussions over tariffs set to be imposed on Mexican imports are continuing on Friday. Now, the president is saying those meetings are going well, but if they don't, the president is threatening to impose tariffs as soon as Monday unless Mexico stops the flow of illegal aliens crossing into the United States from Mexico. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Director Mark Morgan tells Fox News,
"We need Mexico to step up. Look, we've worked with them for decades, and we'll put some pressure. They'll do some good things for a little bit, and then they go back to the sidelines. That has to stop. This is clearly a crisis. We need Mexico, that are integral part, to be partners with us to stop this."
A Queens man who allegedly showed interest in attacking Times Square is facing federal firearms charges. Prosecutors are saying the man attempted to knowingly buy defaced guns that had serial numbers scratched off, but he didn't realize he was speaking to undercover law enforcement, and you're listening to USA Radio News.
So you sit down and do your budget, and you look at all your monthly costs and your bills and your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. That is the typical savings. $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your health care. And when it comes to health care sharing ministries, MediShare is really the gold standard. It's been around for 25 years and has more than 400,000 members. It's been around so long and grown so much because it works. And whether you're single or married or have kids, this could make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. $500 a month can more than cover a car payment or payback loans, whatever. So join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Here's the number to call. They are incredibly kind and helpful to talk to. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
The front-running Democratic White House candidate flips his stance on an abortion law. Here's USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes.
Former Vice President, now presidential contender Joe Biden, changing his stance about what's called the Hyde Amendment, which bans using federal health care money to pay for abortions. After years of support of that policy, he tells a crowd in Atlanta on Thursday night,
"If I believe health care is a right as I do, I can no longer support an amendment that makes that right dependent on someone's zip code."
Explaining he changed his position because of recently passed abortion restrictions by several Republican-controlled states.
Walmart is announcing an in-home grocery service that will bring groceries right to the shoppers' refrigerators. Starting this fall, Walmart will offer the service in Kansas City, Pittsburgh, and Vero Beach, Florida. The retail giant says it will learn and scale the option across the United States, but that timeline is yet to be determined. This is USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290.
The TSA has been allowing illegal aliens to fly without providing any forms of identification. Since December of 2018, the TSA has permitted illegal aliens released from custody to board domestic flights without having any of the 15 forms of identification that are typically required for air travel. The TSA is saying these folks are allowed to fly as long as they provide the form I-862, which is a notice to appear for coming here illegally, in essence. Brandon Judd, president of the National Border Patrol Council, reacts to this news on Fox News.
I was just in RGV and I was processing these people. And what we do is we give them travel documents. But along with those travel documents, you should have to show some sort of government ID. And that's not happening.
Judd continues.
You don't have to allow them on airplanes. Again, you have to look at where the threat could be. We could put them on buses. We could allow them to travel on buses. We don't have to allow them on airplanes, which is what we're doing.
Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan is reacting after a Russian warship nearly collided with a U.S. Navy vessel. He says they're going to launch a formal protest over the incident with the Russian Navy.
The news of this morning is beyond disappointing. You know, the unsafe, unprofessional acts certainly put our men and women at risk.
Please remember, you can find us online at usaradio.com or on Facebook at USA Radio. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Good afternoon. This is Larry McAtee, and you're on the Huntington County Radio Station.